Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You are listening to Preconceived, where we examine the preconceptions that shape how we view the world and the paradigms by which we live our lives.
Hey everybody, I'm Zale Mednick, and welcome to another episode of Preconceived. Taylor Swift is arguably the most famous person in the world, a pop star the likes of whom many of us haven't seen in our lifetimes. Especially over the past year with the release of her latest album, Midnights, and her record-breaking The Eras Tour, it's not crazy to wonder if what we are witnessing right now is something analogous to the Beatlemania of the 1960s. So what exactly is the phenomenon of Taylor Swift? Why has she risen to the heights that she has and captivated so many people like few other artists before her have? Is this truly a special pop culture moment, or is it perhaps being overstated? I'm joined today by Ralph Jakadeen. He began his music career as a musician and concert promoter in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and then as the concert director at the University of Notre Dame. He's worked with artists such as Bruce Springsteen, Kiss, Rush, Hall & Oates, Foreigner, Yes, the Doobie Brothers, Linda Ronstadt, and Kansas, among many others. He's a full-time faculty member at the Berklee College of Music. He joined the Music Business and Management Department in 2013, and in 2015 won the Dean's Award for Innovation and Service. He's a frequent speaker at industry events such as the Folk Alliance International, South by Southwest, CMJ Music Festival, Americana Music Conference, Berklee's Rethink Music Conference, and Harvard's Recording Artists Project Program. He is the co-founder of the Boston Management Group, a professional organization he started 25-plus years ago with Tim Collins, the longtime manager of Aerosmith. All right, Ralph Jakadeen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Zale, it's good to be here. And as I mentioned before, I am a fan of what you're doing. I think it's a great thing. And, you know, I've listened to a handful of your podcasts and I've learned a lot. And boy, it's changed my mind in certain aspects. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
I really, really appreciate you saying that. And yeah, thank you so much. And it's something I love doing. And I really love doing a topic like this, which is a bit lighter than some of the typically heavier topics we do. I mean, I don't expect this to get too heavy, but I did an episode on the Beatles a while ago, about a year ago. And for me, the question there was, we look at the Beatles, especially somebody I wasn't born when the Beatles were a band, and you grew up kind of hearing the Beatles are the best band ever. And I wanted to get to, that's kind of the preconception, the status quo, not that it's a misconception, not that it's wrong, but I was trying to understand what made the Beatles so special. And as I wanted to try and understand what made Taylor Swift so special, that episode rang in my mind a bit. But before we get to kind of that question of why is she so special, if she is so special, I want to understand the magnitude of the moment right now, because in the introduction, I kind of made a comparison to Beatlemania. And as I was writing that thought, is that a crazy thing to say? How big, in your estimation, though, is Taylor Swift right now? Because it feels like it's really big.
Yeah, it started out really big and purposeful. And she's had a brilliant career. And right now, there's a lot of big superstar people out there. But I don't think there's anybody that has a Taylor Swift career. If you just go by the numbers, you know, today, this morning, Spotify came out with their year-end wrap-up. And she was number one streamed artist in the world. It's 26.1 billion streams.
Wow.
That's the, like, you can't even comprehend that. And so I said, if it's 0.005 cents per stream, you know, because the streams are like 0.003 to 0.007, if it's like five in the middle, that's about $130 million just streaming. You know, that's, but anyway, she's our first big monster billionaire as well. But I love your comparison with the Beatles. You know, I was a little kid when they were on Ed Sullivan. And I think it was something like 47% of the households that had television were watching that show. And I just remembered laughing at the long hair and how I went to Catholic school all my life. So all the nuns were just completely, and nuns at that time were young women as well, and probably in the 20s and 30s. And they know what's going on in the culture. And they were kind of trying to talk about the Beatles, but keep us away from the Beatles. And it was beautiful, but it was a seismic shift in generation between our parents and us young kids. And that was at a time where we didn't have streaming and we didn't have the internet. So if, as a little kid, I loved music really early on in life, but I would have to go to a record store to get a Beatles record. I would have to save the money and then get the Beatles record. And then I would have to go to a store and get a magazine that had the Beatles on the cover. And then I would have to subscribe to other music magazines to try to find out what the Beatles are up to or whatever my favorite group is. So we had to work for our love. Our fandom, we had to work for it. Nowadays, it comes on our phones. So it's Taylor's reach of this globe's population. It's right on our phones, and it's way, way different than the Beatles day. You know, when I do talk about Taylor Swift or an artist such as that, I always nod to the Beatles, and I always nod to Springsteen and Rush and other bands that I grew up with. And it's not like she's better or worse than anybody, but her business is bigger. Her reach is bigger. Her influence is bigger. And it's wonderful to see. And I wasn't raised in that generation where I grew up with Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift was happening, and I read the articles. And I did listen to some of the music, but I didn't get it. She didn't speak to me as an old white guy in America. But I'll tell you, I've been teaching at Berklee College of Music here in Boston for about 10 years. It has her music and her career has imprinted my students, and in a big way. So that, you know, when we have these ice-breaking moments at the beginning of the semester, and I say, like, what was your first concert, and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of times it is Taylor Swift, and their parents took them to Taylor Swift concerts, guys and women. And so they were imprinted really early by Taylor Swift's music. And it was interesting. There's a woman in my class yesterday, and she's pretty edgy, but she was wearing a black Taylor Swift sweatshirt. And I said, "So can I talk to you after class about you and Taylor Swift?" She goes, yeah, I would love to. And she was born in California, and her mom took her at the age of 12 or something to see Taylor Swift. And her love affair of Taylor Swift started, and she started her career in music, my student did. And then it was a point where it wasn't cool. So she went to like indie rock and punk rock and things like that. So she, as she morphed out of the Taylor Swift pop artist, she wouldn't tell people that Taylor Swift was still very much in her heart and her earbuds too. So Taylor hasn't lost people, but big stars, whether it's the Beatles or Springsteen, they go in and out of favor according to, your peer group and what's going on with the peer group. But her influence on my Berkeley students has been amazing. We teach a course at Berkeley about Taylor Swift. And now I see there's other schools, including our neighbor across the street, Harvard, they're doing deconstructing her songs. And when you deconstruct your songs, it's about what's going on in society as Taylor Swift is evolving from, and that's the role of women, and that's feminism, and that's empowering women, and that's rights of artists. A lot of people, including my students, didn't know what it is to sign for a record label and you don't own your masters. Well, what does that mean? But she owns her publishing. What does that mean? So all of a sudden there's these discussions that are not led by the music industry. It's led by Taylor Swift and us following her growth in the music business. So it's been fascinating. It's a fascinating subject. I did an interview live on Los Angeles radio. It was drive time, and it was about Taylor Swift because she was in town that day. So the producer comes out and says, hello, we're going to have you in about 5 minutes. We're going to do a little news and some traffic, and then we'll come live to you. And he said, are you at Berkeley? Does that mean you're in Boston? I go, yeah, I'm in Boston right now. And I said, where are you from? And he goes, oh, I'm from New Jersey. And I go, so Taylor or Springsteen? And he goes, oh, don't get me started. I can't say Springsteen because Taylor Swift is everywhere now. But we had this talk, and I said, it's really hard for me to give up my fandom for Bruce. He is and was my guy. But because I love Springsteen so much, I know what it's like. I know what it's like for my students and my daughter and these people to love Taylor Swift because, you grew up with these people. They grew up with you. And they touch your heart and your mind. And that's, you don't give that up. It's a beautiful thing. So I had this conversation with the director, and then I listened to the news and I listened to the traffic. And the traffic was, typical Los Angeles traffic, but they were saying avoid this because of the Taylor Swift concert. And I got on and they said, so what's the influence of Taylor Swift? And I said, well, you just said it on the air with the traffic report, right? And what I've been doing during this tour of Taylor's, I've been going and following the tour with the newspapers in Houston and New York and California. I could get the newspapers. So it's always front page news. And it's about the traffic. It's about the hotels. It's about the fans. It's people lining up to get merchandise days before. So it's very much in our zeitgeist. It's very much spinning around us because the press wants something to write about. This is a great topic. And the Beatles never had that. The Beatles had so much press and publicity only due to the technology. And now Taylor and other artists are really benefiting from the fact that, it's all out there. We don't need to go to a record store. We push a couple of buttons and we got the whole catalog on our phones. It's a beautiful time, but I any comparison with the Beatles, I don't like to go through the numbers and the streams and the influence. I like to go through they were the best at the time.
Yeah, because to an extent, it's apples and oranges in terms of the media they had
obviously Spotify and streaming wasn't a thing back then. The internet wasn't a thing back then. So it's impossible to compare, really. But you answered my question really well there in terms of demonstrating the fact that if you just look at the Beatles in their moment and Springsteen in his moment, Taylor in her moment, mentioning her in the same breath as them is not blasphemous. It seems like people do have, to an extent, just as strong of feelings and associations for Taylor Swift as many people did for the Beatles and Springsteen at those respective times, regardless of the numbers.
You're right on. But what we're seeing now is that, you know, one of the exercises in my intro to music business class is I study the top marketing. It is a book on the Grateful Dead and how the Grateful Dead created a brand and created a career that was so rock solid. And they did a lot of things right. So I go to figure out what's going on with Taylor Swift and the brand. And it's about basically taking the care and feeding of your fans, right? The Swifties. And they're an army. And other bands have these. The Grateful Dead does. Springsteen does. Beyonce does. But the Swifties are amazing because there's so many of them. And they're connecting with each other. And, you know, part of the thing of having Taylor Swift as your idol, your biggest star, is because you have this tribe now. And other bands have had it. She's not inventing this, but they're rabid fans. And they could be activated. And they are.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we're seeing that. I loved the last election. The fans of K-pop, they were ordering tickets to Donald Trump's stadium concerts. And they were getting all these tickets. So they were sold out weeks in advance, but nobody showed up. And it was like the K-pop people were going, yeah, that's our power. And Taylor's really coming into her own as a woman and owning her power. And why I say this is because she does a lot of good with giving away money and time and attention, but now she's going to these Swifties and her fans and being very bold about voting, being very bold about what's going on with the political situation in America, and she's taking a stand. So I salute that. So that's real power. And she has a message to millions and millions and millions of people, and they're listening. And that's great. That's great. I love it.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So Ralph, let's get to kind of that crux of the question for me in terms of the why, because we'll get to the branding, obviously, and that's part of it. And I want to talk a little bit about how she's changed some of the dynamics and strategies within the music industry. But that only comes after an artist has been successful for the merits of being an artist. The talent, I guess. Is the talent just at a different level than other people? Is it the voice? When I think about voices, she's got a very, very great voice, but her range is not that of Whitney Houston or Celine Dion or even contemporaries like Rihanna or Kelly Clarkson, who can get really high. Taylor Swift's got a great voice, but it's not just that, obviously. Is it the songwriting that makes her so special? Is it the persona that she's developed and her story, because a lot of her songs walk through her life, and because she's been around for so long that people feel like that student you mentioned, that they've grown up with her? Is it a combination, or is there one specific facet of her that explains why people have been so attracted to her, that she's gotten to a point where she can be so compelling and then monetize this to the extent she has?
So Zale, it's really funny because I really did a lot of research before this podcast, and I've done other interviews. I know Taylor and her career and all that stuff. And then an amazing thing happened to me. And it was, I was talking to my father, loved to invest in things. He was a physicist and he was a smart guy, and he had a financial advisor. And when my father passed, the financial advisor said, "Hi, I'm Jamie, and I would like to, I knew him, but now we have stocks and things like that. So I have a relationship with this financial advising company." And when I was talking to my financial advisor 4 weeks ago, he said, "What's going on today?" And I go, "Oh, I have an interview with CNN about Taylor Swift, and it's kind of a business aspect." And he goes, "Yeah, Scott's been really smart about that career." And I go, "Oh, what? Who's Scott?" "Taylor's dad." And I go, "Oh, you know him?" He goes, "Yeah, I know him. And I work for him. He's my boss."
Wow.
And for years, the financial group, which is part of Merrill Lynch, was the Swift Group. And it's in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is right by where I grew up, in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I never, ever, ever made the connection. He was like in plain sight. So I said, "So tell me about that." And he started this branch of Merrill Lynch, and eventually he moved to Nashville when Taylor was, I think, 9 years old. So they moved the family there, but he still runs the company. And he said, "Scott's really smart. He's a brilliant financial guy. And there's a committee that handles these stock trades and stuff like that. So he has some eye on my account, and it's a little account, but it's an account." And he says, like, when Taylor was starting out, he needed buses for a tour, and he didn't know why buses were so expensive. So how he had to rent these buses for the tour, and they were so expensive. So he decided to buy a bus. And he knows that by buying a bus, it would be better financially. And just that little story said it opened my mind. And then this morning I was thinking, what do I tell Zale and his listeners that's going to be different? And what I came from is that story of Taylor Swift as a little girl in Reading or Wyomessing. I think it's around Reading, Pennsylvania. And she was unlike other people. Like Tiger Woods. I write to have Tiger Woods or Britney Spears or Justin Bieber. Taylor's family, which is mom, dad, and a brother, were extremely supportive of this little girl in her dreams. So at 9 years old, she was going to New York City, which is about an hour and a half away, for acting lessons and vocal lessons, because she wanted to be somewhere in there. And she started to play a little guitar, and she started to copy people, and she started to do karaoke. And her mom then, at age 11, took her to Nashville and went around, because she was cute and she sang well and this and that. And she was going to all the labels, and all the labels turned her down. But they probably listened to her, because all the labels want the next big something. And she had kind of what it takes with looks and the voice and the drive. But it was Taylor's drive. And then at age 11, the family got up and left Pennsylvania and went to Nashville. And what I hear, the family secret, was they didn't tell Taylor Swift they're going to Nashville so she could pursue her dreams. They were just saying, "We just needed to change," because they didn't want to put that pressure on her. But at age 11, she went the rounds of the record labels, and they all passed at her. And then I read this article in American Songwriter magazine, and there's a great quote. And she was a schoolgirl now, and she said, "Everybody in town wanted to do what I wanted to do. So I kept thinking to myself, I need to figure out how to be different." This is an 11-year-old girl.
Wow.
Like, you know, and I get the sense her family was not there. You got to be a star. You know, you're going to be the next blah, blah, blah. They just like, I'll drive her. I'll drive you to here. I'll take you down and we'll do our thing. And I get the fact that they were very supportive, but not like a Tiger Woods father who at age of 3 months, he was showing him a video. Right. And then the other two I mentioned with Justin Bieber and Britney Spears, they had families that absolutely benefited from the fact that their sibling or their child was a star and made a lot of money. But I don't think they were in a position to be smart about it, financially smart and as parents, smart on what this is doing to the child. So, Zale, I have a lot of students that start out at 5, 7, you know, even younger than 5, 4 years old, especially some of my students from China and Korea, they start really, really young on playing music, like a lot of people do, and then they lose it and they get into other things. But these students start young. But what's the difference between Taylor Swift is it just seems she had enormous drive. And then in that same interview, she had a development deal at RCA at 13 years old. And what that means is RCA would probably give her some time and talent that they have and maybe a little bit of a budget to develop you, to write songs, to kind of coach you, to help you. Because if you become the next Michael Jackson, they got dibs on you. All right. So that was at 13 years old. At 14, when she was in Nashville, she said, quote, "I genuinely feel that I was running out of time." This is 14 years old. "I wanted to capture these years of my life on an album while they still represent what I was going through." So she said that about being 14 years old. She's been doing that all her career. She's been living life and then telling people what she's going through with her heart, her body, her mind, her relationships, her family. But she was very self-aware and very driven. And she's still self-aware and driven. And a lot of times that dies out, you know, life will get you, your bills will get you, relationships get you, and you become whatever you become, right? But she had these dreams, she had focus, she knew what she wanted to do as a little girl. So the preconceived thing is Taylor was such an anomaly in that she was so driven at such a young age. And then she had the family to support that. And the family supports it to this day. And it doesn't seem like there's crazy mom and crazy dad and crazy brother, but it seems like it's a family that supports their talented child. So I love that. And then at an early age, so it's good to have drive and talent. You know, that's just part of the thing. And then what you were saying about talent, there's a lot of talent. I could throw a baseball anywhere around the Berkeley campus and it would be caught by somebody that has god-awful talent, unbelievable talent for singing or songwriting or something like that. Talent's everywhere. But it has to be mixed with drive. Family helps, luck helps, timing helps, all these things help. And they were all to the benefit of what Taylor Swift was doing. And then when you're young in this business, and you have a good team around you, what that team will do is help you with songwriting, help you with producing, engineering, support. And that's Taylor from an early age. She was surrounded by great writers. She was surrounded by great producers and engineers. And that has extended throughout her whole career. Like one of these guys is Jack Antonoff, who's just a brilliant writer, brilliant producer. Max Martin, probably one of the top pop songwriters in the world. These are people that work with Taylor throughout her career. So she's always been surrounded. Her team, so her team was her mom, dad, brother. And then it expanded to manager, label, people like that. So she got surrounded by even more people. And in Nashville, if you throw a baseball, you're going to hit some kind of person associated with songwriting somewhere. And she was full of that. She was constantly working with great songwriters. And that helps because she has her colors, but they have different colors. and they have different strengths. And they were able to get her childhood, you know, school romance stories and help her with it, tweak them so that it goes out to the market and it could be something that that people resonate with her. So there's a lot of people behind Taylor Swift at a very early age. So she was the lucky one that got the lottery of the parents that supported her in lots and lots of ways, and really smart parents. And then they were able to guide her through a label situation, management situation, and they were overseeing things. And whenever I as a manager, have been in a situation of working somebody that has a parent overseeing things, I know that that's good guidance. You know, you can't screw up. You can't take advantage of somebody. You got to do your work. If some parent who really knows the financing side of things is looking out after your career. And these are all things that Taylor had.
So it sounds like obviously the talent's there, but it coincided with opportunity. It coincided with a lot of drive. It coincided with family support. And all those things kind of came together in a way that is rare. And like you said, there is obviously luck that comes into this thing. It's not to say that there are not people out there who are not or could not be as talented as Taylor Swift, but there was an intelligence there with her and her family and a support system going down the right avenue. You mentioned that she said when she was younger that she knew she needed to be different. How did she do things differently when she came to that realization?
I think to have the awareness of working with other people as songwriters, as songwriting. And in, you know, Nashville's full of songwriters, and it's their people's jobs. They get in a room and they write away. One of them is Mac, who's one of Jimmy Buffett's partners, songwriter. And he was one of the ones that work with them. These are really skilled people. And you're an eye doctor. So you just can't become an eye doctor. You have to study other eye doctors. You got to do it yourself. And that's what Taylor was doing at, 13, 14 years old. She was in the same room as these great songwriters. And every time I talk about Taylor, I just want to say, it's the song, stupid. You know, it doesn't really matter how good looking you are. It doesn't really matter how flashy you are. It doesn't matter how much money comes behind you as an investor. It matters the songs, and the songs had to resonate. And they resonated with Taylor because she was writing right from the heart, as Springsteen does, as the Beatles do. Right from the heart. This is her life. This is what she's processing. And she's brought people along for the ride the whole career long. And she's understood one of the things that she can do is she could write a great song. And she writes a great song by herself. And she writes a great song with world-class people helping her. That really, really, that helps. And she's always done that. And the people that are in the studio with her are just the best, you know?
So that's what my hunch was coming into this, in addition to everything you said, was that the songwriting is really, really key. There's a lot of pop stars out there who obviously don't write their own songs. And if they do write their own songs, it feels like there's not too many people who do it in that same vein and for as long, where she really is tracking her life and these emotions that people who are growing up with her can relate to.
Right. And Zale, I have been a full-time artist manager for 30 some years. And a lot of people send me their songs or their albums, and I've managed probably about 15 careers in my career. And there's some great songs in there. It doesn't mean that because you write a great song, it's going to do anything. It's going to be heard. But what you connect Taylor's great songs is that she had a team that knows what to do with it. She's had the resources. She's had the financing. Whether it's her family's financing or label financing or publisher financing, to get these songs to a place that's polished, it's perfect, and then they release it to the market. And, in Nashville, I know for a fact that there's $1-2 million per song of support. So that's, if you have an album out and you're a big star in Nashville, you will have the money to fly around the world and do meet and greets, to do previews, to get your music out there. You have the label or the publisher or yourself has money to hire a team to attack radio, the bloggers, the podcasters, all these people, to know that the new Weeknd album's out there. You know, when the Weeknd and the Beyoncé's and the Taylor Swift albums come out, it is launching one of the biggest brands in the world. So what I've done with my career, my job as a manager is to create a brand, hopefully a worldwide brand with a great bit of talent, an artist, but mine was very little money. You know, I have very little money personally or with my partners to invest in an artist. The first artist I managed is one of the best writers in America named Ellis Paul. And I work with Livingston Taylor. These are great songwriters. But it doesn't mean that their songs will reach an audience. It takes luck, skill, money, contacts. It takes all these things. And they're starting in 20 to 25 years old. Taylor started a decade before that. She's had a lot of time and a lot of time to build a team and her name and her reputation. And then when she would release something, it's great. It touches hearts, you know. It entertains, it empowers the listener. And all of a sudden, we're living our life like I did. I lived my life through a Springsteen song, you know. And I did work in a factory. And all of a sudden, these factory songs really come home. And it's like, my God, he admits he never worked in a factory. But I did. And they're true. The personalities are true. The motivations are true. And we're living through these songs. And that's why if they hit your heart, you have a career. And she's done that consistently.
Her career's evolved, obviously, because she's had a long career. She used to be more country initially. She was in Nashville. Not that it's only country in Nashville, but there's a lot of country in Nashville. And then it turned more poppy. And then I guess she's become more creative and tried new things, especially on this latest album, Midnights. How hard is it for a typical artist to evolve the actual types of music they create and to have their labels be supportive of that? And how has she navigated that in a way that many artists aren't able to?
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at Lady Gaga, you look at Neil Young, you look at Bob Dylan and David Bowie. These are shapeshifters. Like they do what they want and they follow their muse. And Taylor grew up in front of us. You know, she grew up, you know, loving the country music and the country genre. And then she expanded into pop and she expanded, you know, with folk and Americana and hip hop and kind of electronic thing. She could go wherever she wants. As far as getting permission from a label or anybody, she doesn't need permission from anybody. At that level, you say, thank you. Thank you for your album or thank you for the next song. You know, she and her judgments and her team's judgment is really good. And it's like, you know, at that level, Taylor Swift's in charge of everything, but she has a team. She has a lot of very smart people working for her and it's a smart team. So she has every right. And her audience now wants her to do different things. You know, I remember when David Bowie came up with Young American, it was different. Why is it not rock and roll? But then he took us for a ride. And the Beatles did that too. They went according to their muse. And they're making music for themselves, not necessarily for the charts or their fans.
There's certain conventions in the music industry that I don't understand well, but I'm sure you understand much better. And my impression is that Taylor Swift has done some things a little bit differently that has not only defied convention, but maybe changed the way the status quo is looked at in terms of releasing albums versus releasing songs one at a time. Is that, I know she released her latest album one at a time. Is that something that's not typical that she started doing?
Yeah, it's changing. You know, a lot of people are just releasing singles or EPs or something, but it's all different now. It's all different because we're playing for a streaming world. We're not playing for, you know, you go into a store and buy an album or something. People do that, but nonetheless, that's not what the market is morphing to. The market is a streaming market completely around the world, right? So she's doing things different First of all, because she can, she has that influence. The way she released her movie, all right, the movie was priced under $20. It was a great production by her production company of a fantastic tour, which is the biggest tour in the world. So all of a sudden, she's getting the Swifties involved in her career, but she's getting other people, their grandparents that won't go to the big stadium, or the really young kids that won't go to a big stadium, or don't have the money for that. So she's expanding her base through everything she does. But the movie was a great example of that. And, you know, every time Taylor Swift goes to a market, she sucks up so much of the money that the market, like if your Taylor Swift comes to the Boston market, those kids and families that see her will spend a couple hundred dollars or more. And they might not go to see a local band or a movie or something because their money's kind of, so, you know, big artists like that, you know, like the Springsteens of the world and especially Taylor, they give back, they support homeless shelters, food banks, they support nonprofits. And I love that. She's very aware of her influence on a market. Not only is the traffic jammed, the hotels are jammed and the airport's jammed, but a lot of money is flowing to a lot of people. So these movie theaters that were out of business basically during the pandemic are getting thousands and thousands and thousands of people watching the Taylor Swift movie. And when you see the Taylor Swift movie, which is brilliant, with a sound system, which is brilliant, in a comfortable chair, it's like, wow, this is great. This is a movie theater. And my generation of Berkeley kids, they don't go to movie theaters. You know, everything's streamed on their phone or on their laptop. So she's helping out small businesses in a way. And I love that. She's an economic, the Federal Reserve follows the Taylor Swift impact around the country. And as they would do to Beyonce and Springsteen, there's a lot of impact that goes into a community when a big artist comes into town. So she has influence. So whatever she wants to do with releasing, she can do.
It's remarkable. The other aspect that I don't understand, and I'm guessing a lot of listeners don't, about how she's done something different in the music industry is she's released these new albums, Taylor's Versions. Could you explain briefly what that is and what she's doing?
Sure. She signed a record deal. And when you sign a record deal, the label usually owns the rights to the master recording. Okay. So what is on tape, they own the rights to that recording. The song is owned by Taylor. Okay. So the songwriting rights, she has those rights. So she could do whatever she wants with the song. But those masters for her old label, the old label owns those versions of the masters. And when the label was sold and sold and sold, she decided to re-record those, I think it's six albums. She re-records those six albums because she has the right to do that. And she owns those recordings. So all those people that are paying all this money for her label, the money comes back when you license it, when you get a Taylor Swift song in a movie or a commercial. That's how the money comes back from their investment. But Taylor Swift said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to re-record it exactly the way it was or better. And I'm going to release it and I will own it. I will be in control of that. And she has Universal/Republic Records, the biggest label in the world, to partner with her. So she has amazing distribution. She has an amazing team around her. And then with the power of her fans, if let's say Nike wanted to use a Taylor Swift song in a commercial, and if it's on one of those songs from her other albums that she doesn't own, they would probably go to the other albums, the old versions or the new versions. And whoever can come up with the best deal would probably sync that in the commercial. But if they don't use Taylor's version, there's going to be hell to pay with her fans. Because her fans want Taylor to win. Because if Taylor wins, they win. They don't want hedge fund people to win. So there's a lot of pressure on if somebody wants to use the Taylor Swift song, to use one of these new versions that she owned.
Was there contentiousness that led to her doing this, or was this just a philosophical belief that she had?
You know, something, it's like there's three sides to any story. Yeah. And I don't, you know, I haven't read the contracts, but when her label sold itself, they sold the rights to those Taylor Swift songs and they cashed out. Taylor Swift's dad was part owner, I think 2% of the label. So he made some money, but nonetheless, she was not happy that her babies, these albums, were sold to a hedge fund.
Gotcha.
All right. And they had every right to do all that stuff, but you know, it's he said, she said type situation. And her manager at the time, or the guy that bought a Scooter Braun, is a very talented guy, and he's easy to hate because he just mints money with Justin Bieber and other artists. And he's, you know, we need an enemy in the music business, right? The Swiftie fans need an enemy, and he's a perfect enemy. So what she's doing, and she has the clout to do this and the resources to do it, she can re-record her old music. It's hard to do it. It's expensive to do that, but she could do it, and she did it. And now she owns those. And now my students at Berkeley know about publishing and the rights and record deals.
It's incredible. I mean, you could see how it could be a seismic shift, that a lot of artists could start doing this, and that labels will be aware of this when they sell the rights to certain songs, that there's a possibility that other artists could follow suit. So it just shows the influence and the ingenuity.
It's hard to do that. It's hard to do that. It's hard to re-record a song because the sounds, the players, the instruments, the timing, all that stuff is hard. And it takes a lot of money. But listen, she's blazing a trail like nobody else in the music business. She's doing things her own way. She's taking control of her career. We're benefiting as fans. We're benefiting from a society. And listen, she's never been arrested. She doesn't have these face tattoos. I don't think she has any weird, strange addictions. She just works her ass off since she was a little girl. And she was so motivated to do that. And we're seeing the results of that.
There was a Netflix documentary that I think she produced called Miss Americana that I watched during the pandemic. And I was truly astounded in all the positive ways when I watched it, and how incredibly motivated she is. There was a moment in it that really resonated with me, which I think speaks to her drive to not be complacent and to continue to be at the top of her game and at the top of the industry. She puts out an album, and she's already won multiple Grammys at this point. She's already massively popular and famous, but you see her in one scene waiting for the reveal of the Grammy nominations to see if this latest album that she produced was nominated. And it is nominated. And the joy that she has is palpable. But the fact that she cares so much is almost surprising, because you would think that somebody as established as Taylor Swift would at some point say, I'm bigger than this. I don't care. I've achieved what I need to achieve, but not Taylor Swift. And I think that coincides with that drive that you mentioned at the beginning, where there isn't this complacency of I've already made it. She's constantly on the edge of her seat trying to do better and match or top herself.
Yeah, Zale, you don't get to that level in any business without knowing, first of all, at that level, it's a contact sport. They're coming out after you, right? If you become the biggest podcaster in the business, there's going to be people talking trash about you. And you got to be able to deal with it. And you got to, you know, it was really your mom that got you started, or whatever. But listen, you got to be tough as nails. And it's no different than what I went to the University of Notre Dame, and they have big sports teams. And I used to see these athletes and how hard they worked and how dedicated they work. And these were, you know, the football players and the basketball players, they've been stars since they were, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old. And it's all they did. They drove and they just work. But it's hard. It's hard to be that on top of things for that long. And it's hard to be famous. You know, fame brings people down. But she, as you know, what you talked about, that scene, she still cares. she still cares. And then why is she doing this? She doesn't need any more fame. She doesn't need any more money. But now what I'm seeing, she's doing it because of her influence. She could influence things. She has, if she says to people, register to vote, not who to vote for, but register to vote. They close down the internet because so many kids are registering to vote. Not kids, just people in general. So I think the end game is that she's going to be like an Oprah Winfrey, Barack Obama type character that has a lot to do with, you know, even her namesake of James Taylor. These people have a lot of influence. And with that influence, the things that they care about, the environment, politics, voting, things like that, they have a voice, and their voice is bigger and bigger and bigger. But she's young. She's in her 30s, young 30s.
Yeah, and she's
33. Yeah.
Ralph, really, really fascinating stuff. Do you have any final thoughts for people about Taylor Swift?
You know, the basics are she has a great team. She puts out great music. She's a great live performer, and she works harder than anybody. That's the formula. And then you do add luck and timing to the business of that. And then who knows? I'm so glad it's Taylor that we're talking about. I have a lot of respect for her as a woman, as a business person, as the top of the music scene. We got a good one. And I love talking about her. I love talking about this. It's really, really great. I loved it, Zale. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Your passion shines through, and this is a fun one to do. And I'm glad that I didn't commit heresy by mentioning the Beatles in the same vein as Taylor Swift, and you gave me some validation there. And it's really cool for everybody, I think, whether you're a fan or not, just to watch this cultural moment right now that is really at its heights, and to see where she goes from here. And I mean, that also, you said there's a lot of pressure on her too. I think there's a misconception that once you've made it to the top, there's no stress, but the stress might be bigger than ever because you don't want to fall. And that's an unfair expectation that society puts on you, that once you get to the top, you need to stay there. But that's a whole other conversation. I guess I'm trying to ease the burden on Taylor Swift in case she's listening to this and feels like she needs to continue to match what she's doing. But really, really fantastic speaking with you. Ralph, where can people learn more about you?
It's my website is ralphjacketing.com, ralphjacketing.com.
Perfect. I will put that in the episode notes. Ralph, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Zale. Had fun.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Preconceived. Go listen to some Taylor Swift, Taylor's version, I guess. Have a great day.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.